members, invited guests. We take this opportunity to apologize for starting late. We had there been another meeting. Today our agenda has been circulated, it's before you. We should be opening and welcome. Apologies, briefly on the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, briefly on the Recognition of Customary Marriages Amendment Bill, and then closure. That is the agenda, so we'll be dealing with two issues today. Honourable President.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we've dealt with the business of today, and before we close, is it possible for us to have a brief discussion about the programme?
Okay, that is the agenda. Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to specially welcome the Deputy Minister who is leading the delegation. Generally, it is always ideal to have the Minister or the Deputy Minister leading the delegation for legislation, because that is the proposal of the executive to Parliament. We are very thankful that we decided to do so, Deputy Minister. Can you lead us on item number 3, judicial matters?
Thanks, Chair. Look, with both bills, the officials from the Legislative Development Section, led by Mr. Bassett, he can introduce everybody. But with both bills, effectively, they are to give effect to constitutional court judgments. So Mr. Bassett and his team will run through the bills.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Good morning, honourable members. I'm going to ask colleagues of mine to deal with the two bills. On my right is Ms. Virginia Letswallo. It's her first time in this committee, and she'll be dealing with the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. And behind her is Mr. Mokbele Okulubete. He will be dealing with the Recognition of Customary Marriages Amendment Bill. So I'm going to hand over to them. As Deputy Minister said, these two bills emanate from Constitutional Court judgments. Don't leave much room for us to manoeuvre with. The Constitutional Court has been pretty specific on what it wants, and it's given us guidance, and we've taken that guidance. So I'd like to hand over to my colleagues, and they can tell us what the bills are about. Thank you.
Thank you, and morning. To all members, my name is Virginia Letswallo, and I will be taking you through the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. The main aim of the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill is to amend the Divorce Act and the National Prosecuting Authority Act in order to give effect to the decisions of the Constitutional Court. The first clause of the bill seeks to amend Section 7(3) of the Divorce Act in order to give effect to the decision in Holomisa versus Holomisa. Now, in this case, the Constitutional Court declared Section 7(3) constitutionally invalid to the extent that it excludes marriages out of community of property entered into under the Transguy Marriage Act. Section 7(3) empowers a court granting a divorce decree in respect of a marriage out of community of property to order a just redistribution of assets of the divorcing parties in certain circumstances. Now, the shortcomings of this section is that its provisions only apply in respect of marriages entered into before the commencement of the Matrimonial Property Act of 1984 and to civil marriages between African people entered into before the commencement of the Marriage and Matrimonial Property Law Amendment Act. Section 7(3) was enacted to protect women married out of community of property from the potentially harsh consequences flowing from such a proprietary regime. But then this section does not apply to persons married out of community of property under the Transkei Marriage Act. Hence, the Constitutional Court found this section to discriminate against women married out of community of property under the Transkei Marriage Act in that it excludes them from the benefits of a possible just transfer of assets on divorce, and it fails the rationality test in terms of Section 9(1) of the Constitution. Now, Clause 1 of the Bill seeks to address this gap by extending the application of Section 7(3) to persons married out of community of property, not only under the Transkei Marriage Act, but also under any other law in the Republic, the impact of which excludes the benefits accruing to spouses in terms of the section. Clause 2 of the bill seeks to give effect to the decision in Corruption Watch versus the President. In this case, the Constitutional Court declared Section 12(4) of the National Prosecuting Authority Act constitutionally invalid. Now, this section empowers the President to extend the term of office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions or a Deputy National Director who is due to retire. The President is entitled to extend their term of office by a period of up to 2 years. The Constitutional Court also declared Section 12(6) constitutionally invalid to the extent that it permits the President to suspend the National Director of Public Prosecutions or a Deputy National Director for an indefinite period without pay. The Constitutional Court held that these provisions undermine the independence of the office of the NCPP. Now, the proposed provisions in the bill seeks to remove the power of the President to extend the term of office of the NCPP or a Deputy National Director, provide for the period of suspension of the NCPP or a Deputy National Director, provides that their suspension period may not exceed 12 months, and it also provides that these functionaries be entitled to their full salary during their suspension period. The Constitutional Court has set deadlines for remedying these defects. In respect of Section 7 of the Divorce Act, the deadline is the 22nd of October 2020. And in respect of Section 12 of the NPA, the deadline is 12 February 2020. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, may I just come in at the end? As I said, we haven't been given much leeway, or the Constitutional Court has guided us on what we want, and we've given effect virtually entirely to the Constitutional Court judgment in both matters. We do depart in one aspect in the amendment to Section 12 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. The Constitutional Court said that the period of suspension must not exceed 6 months. And the Constitutional Court has given us guidance, and we've stuck to the judgment, with the exception of one matter or aspect in Section 12 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. The Constitutional Court judgment said a period of suspension of an NDPP or deputy NDPP should not exceed 6 months. Our bill suggests 12 months. We're taking into account practicalities and realities. To have suspension proceedings finalised in 6 months, I think, is not feasible, and we don't want to make it too long, and we have suggested, and that's what the bill says, is a period of 12 months. Thank you.
Honourable Deputy Minister.
No, just confirming that, but just to make it clear that the In its order, the Constitutional Court said the period of suspension could not be longer than 12 months, but in the interim period, it would be, so until we pass this law, it's 6 months. And then, as Mr. Bassett had said, the feeling is 6 months is, I mean, if a person wants to wants to delay things, they can delay their disciplinary matter, their committee of inquiry, their inquiry over 6 months, and effectively if they do that, it means they can come back to work. So 12 months was the maximum period that the court allowed, and that's what we are wanting to go for. Also on the Trans-Guy Marriage Act, the judgment was specifically around the Trans-Guy Divorce Act, but the concern was that there may be other laws. You had pre-94, apart from the so-called independent states, you had the other homelands, Bantustans, also passing legislation, and it's the wording is entered into, so there's no reference to the Trans-Guy Marriage Act in the bill. It's entered into in terms of any law applicable in the Republic, the impact of which excludes the benefits. So the idea of that was in case there's a govern, the officials tried to check the laws. Apparently those records are not necessarily all there for everyone. So in case there's a Gazankulu Marriage or Divorce Act that nobody knew about, it's to cover it. So that's why it's not specifically Trans-Guy Marriage Act, but this wording of any law applicable, the impact of which.
No, thank you very much, DM and your team. I will now note hands for comments, questions. Honorable Swart, Honorable Glenis Bettenbach, Honorable Mola.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the submissions, the inputs. I just wanted to understand the rationale. We might have to get copies of the judgment, the 6 months versus the 12 months. Now, I appreciate in practice your challenges, but surely the Constitutional Court would have motivated why they required 6 months period. So that is an issue that's quite a stark departure, understanding the practicalities, but one needs to understand the reasoning. Why the Constitutional Court said 6 months. That's the first issue. The second issue relates to meeting, and that ties in with Honourable Breckenbach's questions about our program. The deadline is 12 February next year. And it's a question to us, will we finalise this? Will the NCOP finalise this? But what is, from the department's perspective, the possibilities of meeting that deadline, considering that Parliament is only going to sit for a few more weeks and there's a process to be finalised? Is it likely that that deadline will be met? If not, will an application be made to the Constitutional Court for an extension of the 12 February 2020 deadline? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Glenis Bettenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm partially covered by the Honourable Swart. I'd also like to understand the reasoning for the six-month period. And while I understand fully the motivation for the extended period, I think we need to look at tightening that up a little bit so that people are not encouraged to slip the thing on forever. As you say, it's very easy to drag the disciplinary on for a long, long time. My own disciplinary with the NPA, we were pushing to get it finalised and it took 2 years. So the dragging was done by the NPA, and it's very hard even when you want it finalised. When the other party doesn't, it's very hard to get the thing moving. So we need to look at ways of tightening that up if we're going to extend that period.
We have also seen that with the magistrates, the postponements in the Magistrates Commission.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's of course welcome the presentation. But firstly, I would like to check what is the status of the Transguy Marriages Act now? Has it been wholly repealed? Secondary to that, with regard to the Section 12 of the Divorce Act, I think it's only fair in a 25-year-old democracy that which has taken a firm stand against an oppression of women in our societies. So it's only fair. Lastly, Chair, I think when I checked on the Constitutional Court ruling with regard to the Nxumalo NPA issue and all that, it actually reminded me, Chair, that we are faced currently equally with the almost similar situation with regard to Section 12 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. But I hope, Chair, that we do not forget that there is no retrospective application of law. I just wanted to make that comment, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Over to Honorable Besant. Or Dion, do you want to say something?
Look, just, I think people must get the Corruption Watch judgment. I think it is available there. Just to stress that they just ruled the indefinite period unconstitutional. I think somewhere else in the judgment, but then it doesn't seem to be part of the order unless I've missed it. They've said it can't be more than 12 months. And the issue, Mr. Swart, is they then read in during the period of the declaration of constitutional invalidity in terms of paragraph 9, that's the suspension for an indefinite period, is suspended for 18 months. During the period of suspension, so that's the 18 months, period shall not be long, shall not exceed 6 months. Obviously, look, I don't know why they picked 6 months. I don't think there was much argument presented about how long these cases take. I mean, remember the court made two changes. One was to say it has to be on pay, full pay. The provision that you can be suspended without full pay was ruled unconstitutional, and then the shortened period. I hear what Honourable Breitenbach says, but I'm not sure how we address it. I mean, in the current matter that is before Parliament, the inquiry and the decision by the President was taken within 6 months of suspension, so it was compliant with the ruling of the court in this matter. However, if it had not, and once the President took the decision, then the person is or the people are removed, so they can't go back to work and the pay stops. However, if it had taken longer, then they could both have reported back at work, which I think in the circumstances would have been a bit difficult, and that's what we're trying to avoid with the 12 months. I can't find the section, and the officials can find where the 12 months comes from. But yeah, but I don't know if that addresses what Honourable Breitenbach's concerns are. You know, but as we understand it, we're constrained by a maximum of 12 months, and at least that's better than 6 months. But we can't go any further, as far as I recall. On the Divorce Act, I think the officials can respond. I mean, my understanding is it's still there, but there is work being done by Justice and Home Affairs on One Marriage Act and redoing the Divorce Act. You will see with the next bill that it's a similar issue. It's of a small point of what happens to marriages, customary marriages that were entered into before the Act came into effect, but it's effectively about the same thing. I think that what happened with the Transkei Divorce Act is that it was an omission at the time. It just got left out, unfortunately, but unfortunately it got then picked up by somebody that it was applying to. The other aspect that hasn't been addressed, but I do want us to address it, is the delay issue. Again, the officials can respond. There is an application that has been lodged to extend the period in this matter, or was it both matters. What the department did, I've asked them to do a sheet for each bill, what processes were followed in correcting both matters. Unfortunately, the process of amending legislation is not something that can be done overnight. But there is a document, if you tabled it or not. I'd like that to be tabled, just because we always get criticized for why did we take so long. And then also to remind members that when we did try and amend a bill that we, an act that we agreed with, that was the prescription matter, before the Constitutional Court had given a final ruling, we ran into problems where we'd introduced the bill before the Constitutional Court ruled and then discovered that the Constitutional Court wanted more sections included. So that bill had to be withdrawn and then is coming back to you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
I think the customary marriage still needs to go to the House of Traditional Leaders also.
It should have been. It has been. Okay. I think the requirement is that it has to go to the I think the committee section. Well, we're not. Yeah. But it has to go for, I think, a month. One of the delays was that they were given the National House time to comment on the bill. That was before it was introduced. They took, 6 months, 7 months before they commented. There's one section that was included in the bill from there, what they wanted, but other sections they wanted are not included in the bill. They would have to come in other pieces of legislation, but again, that can be explained.
Thank you, Chair. Just on that last question of yours, Chair, yes, the National House of Traditional Leaders, the recognition of customary marriages amendment was sent to the National House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership Act by Parliament, and it has to be there, as Deputy Minister said, for 30 days. Comments have been received on that bill. Parliament, I think, has forwarded, Parliament received those comments and forwarded them. We've been copied on the comments that have been made, and we will, with the committee's guidance, deal with those comments as you want us to deal with when the time is appropriate. Just to come back to the judicial matters, yes, and more specific to the question raised by Honourable Swart, the order of the Constitutional Court in the Corruption Watch matter says, should Parliament fail to correct the defect referred to in paragraph 9 within the period of suspension, that's the 18-month period, the interim relief contained in paragraph 11 will become final. So there is that fallback position, but as Deputy Minister has indicated, the department has requested the state attorney to apply to the Constitutional Court for an extension of the deadline, and we are at an advanced stage of that process. Council has been appointed and has been consulted, and an affidavit I know is in preparation, and hopefully will be finalised and signed off by the minister or on behalf of the minister within the next week or so. So there is an application to the court for that extension.
Honourable Short, I think before you make an input, I think it will be important that we get a regular update as to how far you are going to proceeding with that issue, because it has an impact on the programming of Parliament. So we would be happy if we can get update until we adjourn. Honourable Swart?
Chair, the issue of the application, thank you for that explanation. Now, the issue of constitutional court orders that are given against Parliament has been a matter that's been discussed in the programming committee with the Speaker and the Chief Whips
and there is a concern about delays from the executive, but at the same time, the possibility that the judiciary does not have a full appreciation of the parliamentary process. So you've indicated that an affidavit, and there's been incidents in the past of other departments where the court has refused extensions due to delays that were unacceptable. I'm not saying in this case. Would it not be wise to also get an affidavit from the Speaker to indicate the parliamentary process? And I'm not sure that's also conflation of the separation of powers, but at my 12B, because this is an issue which the Speaker is now attending to, and there was a general consensus that there should be some mechanism, and it could be the Speaker engages with the Chief Justice, but in such applications that the Speaker, via the State Attorney's Office, could also file an affidavit to explain the parliamentary process that goes on. You have elections this year, 18 months, what? So that would guide the court in considering, and one would even take it a step earlier when you have advocates arguing and you suspect there is going to be a suspension of the order. And here it says that 18 months would be sufficient time. What actually guides that decision from the judiciary that would be sufficient when it seems that there's a challenge every time to meet those deadlines for various reasons? So this is a broader issue, Chair, that is being looked at into the Sixth Parliament. How do we comply? There's a number of constitutional court orders, not only this department, and we are running into problems with complying with the cut-off dates with that issue. So it could be an issue that we might also want to engage with the Chief Justice when we have that informal discussion with him at a certain stage. Thank you.
I was thinking like that we would need also in our engagement with the judiciary that we might need to raise that issue. Honorable Mofokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to check with the department that did they ever actually try to, especially on the comments for the bill, did they make any comments? Because I don't see anything that comes from there, because it shows that on the 20th of April 2018, there was a government gazette that was published, and we have 21 stakeholders that were especially, those were invited to comment. And this included the Department of Women, Corporate Development, Arts and Culture, NC Women's Six Black Session, the rest. Then I wanted to know from their side, did they have any comments that they made in this regard?
Welcome, Honorable Nkwankwa. Over to you, Honorable Bessert.
Thank you very much. To respond,
To Honourable Mofokeng, I think you're speaking about the customary marriages. Yeah, but are we not coming to that? Or are we dealing with both? Both? Oh, okay.
Thank you. To respond to Honourable Swart, yes, what we've been at pains because we also applied for an extension in the recognition of customary marriages amendment law. And in both affidavits, we've been at pains, and the one affidavit has already been filed for the customary marriages in the Constitutional Court. And in both affidavits, we've set out in what the Minister has set out in quite comprehensive detail is the process that it takes for the Executive to get a bill ready for introduction into Parliament, as well as the process is followed, generally speaking, in the parliamentary process. So that has been set out in quite detail. We've also pointed out that last year and this year were, can I say, atypical years from a legislation point of view, in the sense that the elections do bring to, I don't want to say bring to a halt, but they do have an impact on the passing of legislation. And we've got statistics that we've put in the affidavit to show what happens in every election year, how the statistics just in the number of bills that justice has finalised in Parliament, how the numbers drop in every particular election year since 1994, and it tells quite a story. But we have set out in quite detail all the processes and the difficulties that are experienced, because there are a number of processes that have to And I'm talking that have to be complied with before you can get the bill to Parliament. You've got to take a bill through a JCPS cluster, and that involves DEVCOM, that involves the DG cluster, that involves a Cabinet Committee, and that involves Cabinet. And if you miss one of those, if DEVCOM doesn't like a particular thing, the bill has to wait for a following month, because DEVCOM and the DG cluster, for instance, only sit once every month. And those all give rise to delays. And we also were at pains in this particular matter to point out that I think we were only given 18 months for the corruption watch matter. And in an election year, that was particularly challenging. We did what we could. We will make available what the department has done since the judgment, setting out the steps that have been taken. But I want to reiterate that the affidavit in this matter and customary marriages is very detailed in trying to indicate to the Constitutional Court going forward what the processes are and the difficulties that we experience and what Parliament experiences in the passing of legislation. So that is something, and I think it's important that it's been raised by Honourable Swart, because we're finding more and more that even the usual 24 months that Parliament gives us to rectify legislation is becoming increasingly difficult to do. And when you're given 18 months in an election year, it becomes very, very, very difficult, no matter how hard you try.
Chair, could we get a copy of that affidavit that's been filed? A report on each bill about the process is followed, but I'm sure there's no problem with the affidavits.
Any further questions, honourable members?
Okay. Chair, just on that, the people that commented on the customary marriages amendment bill, we're going to be dealing with, we're going to do a presentation on that bill now, with approval of yourself, and we will deal with the consultation process there during the course of that presentation, if that is in order.
But now we are confusing our processes, because as you were speaking, we are covering both. I think she touched on the customary marriages. She touched on the NPA issues. But you may proceed, but I'm just warning that you are confusing our processes.
Because there is an overlap in a sense. The judicial matters deals with the NPA, obviously that's on its own, but it also then deals with another judgment that related to the Transkei Divorce Act. So that's the thing that's being amended. The customary marriages amendment is another court case, which is in the recognition of customary marriages amendment bill.
May proceed.
Thank you, Chair. May we then go on to the recognition of during the presentation, and I'm going to ask Mr. Mokulibete to take us through that presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. My name is Makubela, and my surname is Mokulibete. I have been requested to do a presentation.
We can't hear you.
My apologies, Chair. I have been requested to do a presentation on the recognition of customary marriages amendment bill of 2019. Chair, as has been addressed by the Honourable Elmaset, the amendment emanates from the judgments of the Constitutional Court. There's a matter of Ramuhovi versus the President and others. In this judgment, the Constitutional Court was confirming the decision of the Limpopo Local Division of the High Court, which found Section 7(1) of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act 1998 to be inconsistent with the Constitution and invalid to an extent that it unfairly discriminates a woman in polygamous marriages entered into before the commencement of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act. And this mainly on the basis of gender and race, ethnic or social origin. Thank you. Section 7.1 of this Act provides mainly that the proprietary consequences of customary marriages entered into before the commencement of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act continue to be governed by customary law, in terms of which wives have no right of ownership and control over marital property, which right is reserved solely for the husbands. Now, Chair, the declaration of constitutional invalidity was suspended by the Constitutional Court for 24 months to afford Parliament an opportunity to correct the defect that gave rise to the constitutional invalidity. And Chair, failure by Parliament to correct the defect within the time set, which is by, I believe it should be 29 November 2019, will result in the interim order of the court becoming final. That is the order that has been made by the court will automatically become final if Parliament failed to correct the constitutional invalidity that has been confirmed by the court. Now, in this instant, the court considered to be appropriate relief to be a suspension of the declaration of invalidity accompanied by an interim relief. The court actually made provision for a twin relief, which has the effect of granting immediate relief to the vulnerable group of wives in the pre-act customary marriages, was also given due deference to Parliament. That is to enable the Parliament to correct the constitutional defect in the Act. Now, the interim relief in broad terms is that a husband and his wives in the pre-act polygamous marriages must share equally in the right of ownership of and other rights attaching to family property, including the right to management and control of family property. And a husband and each of his wife in each of the marriages constituting the pre-act polygamous marriages must have similar rights in respect of house property. Honourable members, in the Gumede judgment versus the President, the Constitutional Court declared Section 7.1 of the Act to be constitutionally invalid insofar as it relates to the de facto monogamous marriages, but left open the question of whether Section 7.1 was constitutionally invalid in as far as it relates to polygamous marriages. In addition, Section 7.2 was also declared constitutionally invalid, and it was ordered by the court that the wills entered into after the commencement of the Act be severed from the subsection. The object of the bill is essentially to give effect to the two judgments, that is the Ramahovi judgment and the Gumede judgment. The interim relief contained in the Ramahovi matter is used in the bill to determine the appropriate consequences of the polygamous marriages entered into before the commencement of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act. Now, the current position, if I may refer to clause 1 of the bill, the current position in relation to the the definition of a traditional leader is that any person who intends, that is, traditional leader means any person who intends of customary law or any other law holds a position in a traditional ruling hierarchy. Now, what the department has done in this regard is to make an amendment to this definition of a traditional leader, and then the amendment is to say the traditional leader means a traditional leader contemplated in Section 1 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003. Now, Clause 2 of the Amendment Bill amends Section 7(1) of the Act to provide that the proprietary consequences of a polygamous marriage, customary marriages entered into before the commencement of the Act are that spouses in such a marriage have a joint and equal ownership and other rights, and rights of management and control over the marital property. The rights contemplated in Clause 7(1)(a) must be exercised in respect of all house property by the husband and wife of the house concerned, jointly and in the best interest of the family unit constituted by the house concerned, and in respect of all family property by the husband and all the wives, jointly and in the best interest of the whole family constituted by the various houses. Clause 2A further provides that each spouse retains exclusive right over his or her personal property, and that for purposes of Section 7(1) of the Act, the terms marital property, house property, family property, and personal property have the meaning ascribed to them in customary law. Now, the current position in relation to Section 7(1) is that the proprietary consequences of a customary marriage entered into before the commencement of this Act continue to be governed by customary law. Now, the amendment that has been effected is to the following effect. We are introducing a clause A in Section 7(1)(a), which will provide that the proprietary consequences of a customary marriage in which a person is a spouse in more than one customary marriage and which was entered into before the commencement of this Act, that a spouse in such a marriage have a joint and equal ownership and other rights, and rights of management and control over marital property. Now, Clause B will essentially read that the rights contemplated in Paragraph A of Section 7(1) must be exercised in respect of all house property by the husband and wife of the houses of the house concerned, jointly and in the best interest of the family unit constituted by the house concerned, and in respect of all family property by the husband and all the wives, jointly and in the best interest of the family constituted by the various houses. Clause C will read each spouse retain exclusive, I beg your pardon, rights over his or her personal property. For purposes of this subsection, the terms marital property, house property, family property, and personal property have the meaning ascribed to them in customary law. Clause 2B seeks to amend Section 7(2) of the Act by the deletion of the words entered into after the commencement of the Act. Now, this has the effect which is in line with the Gourmet judgment, that all monogamous marriages, customary marriages, whether they are entered into before or after the commencement of the Act, in community of property, in community of profit and loss, unless the spouse is specifically determined otherwise by means of an antenuptial contract. Now, the current position in clause 2.7, in section 7.2 of the Act, is that a customary marriage entered into after commencement of this Act, in which a spouse is not the partner in any other existing customary marriage, is a marriage in community of property and of profit and loss between the spouses, unless such consequences are specifically excluded by the spouses in an antenuptial contract which regulates the matrimonial property system of their marriage. Now, the proposed provision is to cut out from section 7.2.
Your voice is too soft.
My apologies. Where should I start, or should I continue, perhaps? Continue. Thank you. What we have done in terms of an amendment to this clause is just to cut out the words entered into after the commencement of this Act. Chair, this is essentially to comply strictly with the principle of severance that has been effected by the Constitutional Court in the Gumede judgment. That's essentially what we have done, and nothing more, nothing less. In relation to this section. Now, Chair, clause 3 provides for a transitional arrangement based on the interim relief as set out in the Ramohovi judgment. Clause 3.1 provides that the provisions of clause 2 of the bill do not invalidate the winding up of the deceased estate that was finalized, or the transfer of marital property that was effected before the commencement of the bill. Clause 3.2 provides that the above-mentioned provisions do not apply to the transfer of marital property where, at the time of such transfer, the person to whom the marital property was to be transferred was aware that the marital property in question was subject to a legal challenge. There's no current provision, and the proposed provision reads as follows, Chair. Clause 3.1, the provisions of Section 2 of this Act do not invalidate the winding up of a deceased estate that was finalized, or the transfer of marital property that was effected before the commencement of this Act. Clause 2. Subclause 2, I beg your pardon. The provisions of subsection 1 do not apply to the transfer of marital property where, at the time of such transfer, the person to whom the marital property was to be transferred was aware that the marital property in question was subject to a legal challenge. And clause 4 is just the short title. And Chair, the consultation processes that were engaged by the department. The bill was published in the Government Gazette of 20 April 2018 for comments, and the various stakeholders were specifically approached to provide comments. These stakeholders include the African Gender Institute, Black Sash, Center for Applied Legal Studies, Commission on Gender Equality, Commission for the Promotion and the Protection of Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, the Department of Arts and Culture, the Department of Cooperative Governance, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the Department of Women, the Department of Home Affairs, Human Rights Institute of South Africa, the Law Society of South Africa, the National Association of Democratic Lawyers, Human Rights, the Public Protector, National Movement on Rural Women, South African Human Rights Commission, Section 27, Women's Legal Center, Women's Net, and the National House of Traditional Leaders. Now, the bill was adopted to take into consideration the comments that have been received from these stakeholders. That will be my presentation, Chair, and I thank you.
Sorry, just Mrs. Mofokeng's point was, what were the submissions? I don't know if anybody has got that.
Let's have one chairperson.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, then. Let's note hands, and the first question would be the one that the DM has reminded the department that it has not yet been answered. Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Mofokeng, is that all? Honorable Swart, in that order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is certainly the same as the Deputy Minister's question. Is it possible for us to see the submissions? And my second question is, why is there no mention made of women having many husbands? Why only of men having many wives? Why is that the position?
That's a heavy one. Honorable Mofokeng.
Honorable
Kwankwaya noted.
Thank you very much. I'm covered on the part of that maybe we should see the submission by Honorable Breitenbach. But going back to the question that I raised before, you'll note that the summer where it says that the Home Affairs are supposed to be actually making comments. Hence, I was asking that did you have those comments from the Department and Home Affairs?
Honorable Swart.
I'm just interested in the role of the state in the Constitutional Court litigation. It doesn't seem, if I read the judgment correctly, that the state played any role. And I want to commend to attorneys that acted for the applicants in this matter, who argued against, in one case, a seventh respondent had two silks and four junior counsel. Says a lot for the sidebar. But what I would obviously like to ask here, we see the cut-off date is the 30th of November this year. And so it's very unlikely that that order will be complied with. And again, this is a prime example of a delay that's been 2 years. The judgment was given on the 30th of November 2017. So my concern is, firstly, what role did the state play? I see this, the state was, the president was the first respondent, the minister was the second respondent. But again, if I read this correctly, there was no role played by the government in this application at this late stage of the confirmation in the Constitutional Court. And then, is there any process that you allude to that this also been an application for an extension of the suspension period? I think you did, if I remember correctly, say that that was the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Nkonko.
I might be completely out of order here and be irrelevant, but I think I don't have a problem. Yes, I, at the back of my mind, what Honorable Breitenbach is asking about did come up to say that why are we only favoring men? What about polyandry and so on? But I think I thought perhaps when I came in here that at some point we would also be able to deal as Parliament with the more problematic areas of the bill. You've highlighted them of the Act as it stands. The consent by parties, the lobolo, when is it agreed to, and all of these issues. Because there's a lot of confusion there at some point, Chairperson. There's a lot of confusion. Upnyuka Nengalo in many courts is interpreted as lobolo, which is not. It's different. It's a traditional engagement. But because you've agreed to say, at some point in time you're going to come back, you're not necessarily paying lobolo. But because it's a payment towards that, it's a contribution, but it's traditional engagement. From where I come from, it's not lobolo, but it can be easily interpreted as such. And all of these steps, I want to make another example, Chairperson. While you're sitting there, anyone can actually go to court and file a divorce against you and claim that you're married in terms of customary rights, and the court will have to entertain the application and do whatever it needs to do in terms of even providing interim relief.
your ex-girlfriend from 1995 can do that. They can. And claim that and say they are divorcing you. And then we have to undergo that process. So I think at some point we need to tighten up the act and make sure that we clarify these issues, including lobolo, that practice, the handover. What is the handover? What is not a handover? How can it be done? What are the processes? Because traditionally when you sit around, I have a document, for example, from Amakgakgabe Kingdom that talks about these issues and how we misunderstand them. I want to give you one example before I shut up, Chair, as maybe food for thought and something we need to consider in future. In the past, it still happens in some villages where you can go and pay lobolo for my sister and someone else actually beats the price and comes up with 10 or 20 cows and your lobolo is taken out of the cloth so that they can... Yes, it used to happen. It's still practiced in some villages. So who paid lobolo in that case? It's things that you must clarify and be able to understand as to exactly what you want to capture here, because the confusion that takes place, it depends. If you take it to the Western Afai Kaya Court, you might get a different outcome. You take it to the North Gauteng High Court, on the very same issue, you get a different outcome. It depends on the interpretation and the understanding of the judges in many instances on these issues. And I think as Parliament at some point, we need to be able to provide guidance once we've done proper research and consulted the various stakeholders who are affected by these issues. And I'm one of them who has a very good understanding of how these things are done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Can I just start? On the issue, Honourable Breitenbach's question, Honourable Nkwankwa can maybe respond, but I wasn't aware that polyandry was part of customary law of any grouping in South Africa. And definitely in terms of the recognition of Customary Marriages Act, it provides for polygamy, and because it was trying to regularize customary marriages. That's something to look at. I do think, the officials can give more details as to, I think it's important that everybody be given the submissions and things, but, we tend to sort of overcomplicate the process. The court said specifically these sections must be changed, and that's what was done. And the bill, as you would have seen, the judgment was in November 2017. The bill was published on the 20th of April 2018. So that's 4 months later. The problem then is that the public, and I think it was also the National House, don't understand that, look, we're only dealing with these sections. They then raise the point that Honourable Nkwankwa raises, but look, there's other sections of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act that we would like to see amended. But in fact, what we're asking for comment on is what's in the bill, which is what the court wanted. But the public often, people that are not familiar with the processes, often don't see that, look, you're just being asked on this, not on the other things. It's likely when the judicial matters is put out that you might have a whole lot of other comments on the National Prosecuting Act. But actually, we're just amending those sections. So, I think it's linked to what Honourable Swar, well, he was raising about how long it takes and we should be briefing the courts, but I think also why does it take so long is the question. We should be doing what Honourable Nkwankwa is saying of looking at reviewing, and it is happening with Home Affairs on an issue of a single marriage act, but those are the valid questions. And when we approach the public for comment, that's what they want to raise. They're not interested in these technical provisions because it doesn't really affect them too much. I think the other issue is why was the state, the president, the Minister of Justice, not represented in the Constitutional Court case? And my understanding is that there was, parties agreed that those provisions were unconstitutional, so there was nothing to defend. I think, but as far as processes, we can give you the affidavit, we can give you this two-page memo, three-page memo on each steps. Just to say also that the Minister of
Justice did write to the presiding officers on the 25th of July before the bill was introduced, suggesting that this bill, because it's a Section 76 bill, be handled by a joint committee of the National Assembly and the NCOP. Unfortunately, that wasn't agreed to. The bill did sit, was introduced, I think, on the 3rd of September, but it was only advertised, I think, last week by the committee section, so that also lost time. But definitely this bill will not meet the deadline because it's a provincial competency bill, and there doesn't seem to be any eagerness by Parliament to fast-track it and shorten the periods. And maybe also to say that, look, the legal action is being embarked on in consultation with Parliament. So it's not Justice doing it on its own, it's with Parliament as well.
Thank you, Chair. Just Honourable Mofokeng, the Department of Home Affairs, as far as I can remember, didn't comment on the bill. We can make the comments available that we received, and we will do that when we make this other document available that the Deputy Minister has referred to. And yes, the application to the Constitutional Court for an extension of the deadline has already been filed in the Constitutional Court, so I'm hoping that was filed in October sometime, I think in the middle of October, the 14th of October, so I'm hoping that the Constitutional Court will possibly give judgment very, very soon. Okay, let me leave it there. Thank you very much.
Any additions from the chair?
Thank you, Chair. I don't have anything further to add. Thank you.
I think the discussion on this matter borders on the issue of our program, which is our next item that we'll be dealing with. Because, for instance, if you are going to be applying to the court, what value will it have to start processing it on the 3rd of December, but on the 26th of November? Because on the 6th of December, the House is attending. So I think those are some of the issues that we will deal with when we deal with the program. But thank you very much for the inputs. The advertisements were made, I think, last week until the 21st of November. The bills are out there for public comment. And then thereafter, we will decide when are we starting with the public hearings, because we still have to conclude also before we adjourn the Jiva and the Mkhwezi matter. So our program is quite full, but it will be important for us to get the updates as to how the court process is unfolding, so that if there is anything that we need to do, we can rearrange our program. Thank you very much, DM. Thank you for leading the delegation. Don't want to detain you more than what you have been detained for. So we will proceed with the program. Honourable members, one of the issues that I forgot to deal with was the issue of the apologies. We have the outstanding apology of Honourable Sir, who is recovering, and then we have Honorable Hisham Mohammed, who has attended another meeting. And we have an apology of Dr. Jose. Those are the apologies. Are there any further apologies?
I suspect that apart from the standing apology from Mr. Self, we are going to have a second one. But I will detail this when we discuss apologies in another meeting.
Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you very much. Honorable members, the draft program has been circulated, but I must indicate up front that it's an old one. It has not been updated in line with our decision that we took last week of giving Advocate Ziba until the 7th of November. So we will need to do a little bit of tweaking to on the program. But before we proceed, I think it would be fair to give the person who has requested that this matter be on the agenda item so that we can be in a position to know what is in her mind. Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please don't take this as criticism, because it's not. This committee is infinitely better run than it was in the last Parliament. It's also infinitely better chaired than it was in the last Parliament. I just have a concern that we have a lot of important work to get through and a lot of legislation that requires attention. And yet we find ourselves sitting for short periods of time. So like today, we're done for this morning. The time that's left free, of course, there are many other things that one is busy with and that you can use time for. But I worry that the schedule is not sufficiently tight for us to get to everything that we need to get to. And we're falling into the trap of starting late, finishing early. Sounds a bit like the courts and the NPA's problems. We don't want to be there. So my concern is a general concern of not utilizing our time to the maximum. That's really my concern. But again, please don't construe it as criticism of yourself. It's not meant that way. Or criticism of the officials. It's not meant that way.
No, I think it's fair. It's fair. In fact, at some point, we were of the view that we should include that as part of our start plan, planning better for even for next year. Because, I mean, the amount of work before us at this rate will not be able to do a third of it. But we thought that since quite a number of members are new, we give them a feel of what is generally a committee's work looks like, and then before we start our work next year, we go to a detailed strategic planning session. I mean, there were issues that I think you raised around June, July, about whether in the manner in which we are dealing with the budget vote, where the departments would have a presentation of 2 hours and questions for 30 minutes, then we are done. Is it the most effective way? So these are some of the issues that we would really need in that start plan to have a more robust way of dealing with our work. And of course, also, how do we ensure that the program reflects the amount of work that is before us? Because I think people can get an impression that we don't have a lot of work that is before us. Because in the manner in which we structure the program, I do think that it's well taken. I think we will have to go into much more detail in terms of the program that we'll be drafting next time. Thank you very much for that. Honorable Mola, Honorable Horn.
Thanks, Chair. Just one aspect of the program on the 6th, which is tomorrow. This week's program that was sent, this did not reflect. I wanted to check, are we still, the discussion on the removal of Chiba and Mwego from office, it's here in the program, Chair, for Wednesday. But I'm saying, what was sent to us for this week, this did not reflect. So that's why I wanted to check what is the issue.
That is why I said this is an outdated program.
because last week we agreed that we are giving Advocate Jiba 7 days, which ends on the 7th. So we cannot meet a day before. And I think now this is going to be a wasted day. And I think that is the problem Honorable Dennis Breitenbach was raising. How do we use time much more efficiently going forward? Honorable Horn?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My issue is on the, I think it's the 12th and 13th, which has been set aside for that those interviews regarding the Deputy Public Protector. We also have questions to the Minister in the afternoon of the 13th. So I don't know whether in terms of the planning, whether invites have been sent out, whether there's a program for those 2 days regarding the interviews. Previously, I got the impression that we would get permission to proceed with the interviews even during plenary, but there will obviously be a clash if we do so on the Wednesday the 13th.
I think it is valid because you can't interrupt the panel when it starts sitting. And some of the members here will be asking those questions in the House, so they need to be in the House to ask those questions. Can we work on it when we come back with a revised program? Because there is no way that we will would be able to be in two places at the same time. It was Honorable Mola. Honorable members, can I suggest that we look at two possible dates? Maybe you can decide. The adoption of the report, depending on the date of the interview. The adoption of the report of the Deputy Public Protector will not take the whole day. It's a short process. That we start on the 20th, and let's say we ask the Speaker not to attend the House. We start on the 20th, and then the 21st, we don't go to the House again. And then we include the issues of the discussion around the issue of Advocate Jiba and Mkhoi. My suspicion, we could deal with, the other suggestion was that we deal with it around the 3rd of September, 3rd of December. But my other fear is a situation where you get a 1,600-page submission this week, just before the cutoff date. And you find that, because I generally think that some of the submissions are raising serious technical and procedural points. And if we push it towards December, we might not be able to meet the deadline. So the earlier we deal with the issue, so that if there's anything, then we can have enough time to respond to it. So that is why I'm suggesting the date of the 20th and the 21st. Because, I mean, even if you look at the Western Cape High Court judgment, in fact, we have to deal with this matter expeditiously. I don't see us being able to justify going beyond this term of sitting of Parliament. So, so I would really propose that we look at the date of the 20th and the 21st, possibly around the 26th, 27th, maybe we might be looking at the adoption of the report. secretariat, if there is no contra review, the secretariat then must do the necessary letters to the presiding officers so that we are excused for the day, for the 20th and the 21st to deal with the matter. Honorable Hall?
Yeah, while we're on that subject, Chair, a letter from Mr. Mukwege was also circulated. So at some stage, obviously not to, as you alluded to drag out processes further, I think we should just deal with that letter sooner rather than later.
Can I suggest, honorable members, because we do not have time, can we generally have a preliminary views by parties? Because I asked the secretariat to circulate it to everybody so that we can go through it. What are generally our preliminary views? Because if we push everything towards the 20th, then we are going to run out of time.
Can I proceed, Chair? Yeah, Chair, I mean, I've read the letter. I'm inclined not to accede to the request or to advocate the committee to not accede to the request for a number of reasons. Firstly, I mean, in respect of Mr. Mukwege, there was a timelines set out. He filed his submissions, and then even when the court application was brought by Ms. Jiba, he said that he will sort of, and I don't want to be rude now, but he would ride on her coattails there, because as he indicated, he did not have money to brief counsel to bring his own application. Now, the way I understand it, he wants the opportunity to, through counsel, which he previously said he could not afford, to come and address Parliament on the specific issue of whether there was a breach of a court order by the President in proceeding with the Mokoro inquiry, despite the fact, to put it in simple terms, that there was possibly still an appeal to the Constitutional Court that could influence the outcomes of the GCV matter. Now, firstly, that is an argument which the court in the Jiba matter did not allow, because it was not contained in the initial papers. So on a technicality, the court said we will not deal with that argument. It's obviously within Ms. Jiba's right now to fully argue that in her submissions, which is due by the 7th. And obviously, if it is then considered, it would apply in both cases. So there would be no prejudice if we do not allow for Mr. Mukwege to come and address through Council Parliament on that issue. But secondly, even just on the face of it, it's quite clear in reading that initial judgment of the Freedom Under Law case that the appeal envisaged by the court at that stage was the Supreme Court of Appeal appeal. And secondly, ultimately, the so-called Constitutional Court appeal was really a non-event, because the court found that it did not raise a constitutional matter. It was all about the application of an act. And if there was anything that it maybe differed with the SEA, it was on facts, and it would not interfere with the facts found by the SEA. So in that sense, even if technically speaking, there was still an appeal that would proceed, it ultimately, nothing turned on it. But yeah, to cut a long story short, I think my view is that there could be no prejudice for Mr. Mukwege. He had his opportunity. For the fact that he didn't think of the argument at the time, doesn't mean that we now all of a sudden should reopen the door for him again. And then secondly, one would suspect, just reading the judgment and what was coming from the Western Cape High Court, the unsuccessful court application, the court made it quite clear that that specific argument is one that Ms. Jiba can come and make to the committee. So it's not as if we're unaware of that argument. Quite possibly we will be, in any event, under an obligation to deal with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Swart.
No, Chair, I'm in broad agreement. I appreciate the arguments that are being presented to us on these papers before us, but in a preliminary reading, I think that there will be the opportunity, as my colleague Mr. Horn has pointed out, I don't think there's any prejudice, and we will be considering all these issues as well. And I think to then ask for a particular counsel to come and address us on those particular issues is maybe not the wisest and way forward for us, considering the issue of timelines and considering the fact that the arguments are put before us and can be put before us in writing. Thank you.
Okay. There are no further views on this matter. It's just a preliminary discussion just to get a feel of how members, their initial reactions to this issue. So we will discuss it on the 20th when we start the formal deliberations. The formal deliberations or the continuation of the process. Honourable members, are there any other issues? Honourable Botlacher?
It's not with regard to the program, but something else came up somewhere. In the preparation for the strategic planning, if we are going to have one next year, I would like to ask if the committee section can give us a template of all the court and constitutional court rulings that this committee needs to see to within those specific deadlines. I'm sort of, as you know, I'm new here, and I don't know the specific deadlines the courts have set with regard to specific things. So if you can give us a template of that, that we can also work on for next year in the strategic plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of the meeting. We are not meeting tomorrow. We will meet next week. The meeting is adjourned.